Imagine being told that you won't survive without a new heart, or you won't ever see again without new corneas. Imagine knowing that your entire future depends on somebody else donating those organs, but that the chance of that actually happening is extremely slim. That is the reality for thousands of South Africans who find themselves living suspended lives, waiting for an organ that might never come. Around 4,000 people are on the waiting list at any time. Yet less than 1% of South Africans have registered as potential donors. If it was you or your loved one, wouldn't you do anything you could to change those odds? Welcome to A Gift of Life, a podcast series that examines the subject of organ donation in South Africa and asks what we can do to improve the chance of a second chance for those patients. I'm your host, Pippa Hudson, and over the course of this series, I'll be sharing stories of organ and tissue recipients, donors and their families, as well as the doctors, transplant coordinators and other professionals who help turn one family's tragedy into another family's greatest hope. I hope we'll address many of your questions around organ and tissue donation and perhaps inspire you to sign up as a donor yourself. Before we hear the personal stories of those impacted by organ donation, I thought it only fitting that we should start with the Organ Donor Foundation of South Africa itself, just to give us a broad overview of the donor landscape in this country. It's a pleasure to welcome to the podcast the organization's two executive directors, Samantha Nichols and Joost Vermeulen. Welcome to both of you. Before we talk about the donor landscape in South Africa, won't you just briefly tell us a bit about the foundation itself?
Yes, so the Organ Donor Foundation is a non-profit organization. We are founded in 1988, and our role really is to educate the public and create awareness about the need for more organ and tissue donors in South Africa.
And the reason that that's such a crucial job is because we have such a critical shortage of organ and tissue donors in this country. It's due to a lot of reasons, which we will be speaking about over the course of this series. But one thing that I think a lot of people will be surprised to hear is that the awareness raising you're talking about doesn't just apply to the public. It also applies to the medical profession itself. People say South Africa, we're the country that produced the world's first heart transplant. Obviously, people must be aware of organ donation. I think the assumption is that all doctors receive thorough training in this as part of their medical training. Why is lack of awareness in the medical profession such a thing?
So transplantation, we must realize, lives on the fringes. Transplantation is not necessarily the biggest problem in South Africa. So, you know, you can imagine that doctors get training about the most important things. Not that transplantation is not important. Everything is important. But there's much more, you know, matters that's pressing. And you can imagine that people get more training in that. We know in countries such as Spain, there are intensivists, you know, intensive care doctors that are on teams, and they work in hospitals directly as peer-to-peers. And that has a huge impact. But then they have got the infrastructure to do that, not only financial infrastructure, but also people infrastructure. It's not really true to say we're not educating the people, but a lot more would be very, very beneficial.
Okay. And I obviously hear you, a country with so many challenges, there's so many competing needs and budget demands, you can understand why it's not always top of mind all the time. Obviously, we hope that a series like this is going to help just shift the needle up a little bit and raise that awareness a notch or two. Samantha, it might seem like an obvious question, but besides the heart transplant we've already mentioned, what other organs can actually be donated?
So we use the phrase save seven lives. One organ donor can potentially save seven lives by donating your heart, your lungs, your liver, your kidneys, and your pancreas. And, you know, skin is also life-saving. Many people don't know that with tissue, skin is life-saving as well.
Okay. We will have an in-depth conversation about tissue donation specifically in a later episode, but thank you for that overview. The tissue donation, by the way, can reach dozens of people with a single donor, so it really does deserve an entire episode, but more on that later. Let's talk about the numbers and the stats. How many transplant operations are typically carried out in South Africa each year?
So we did a sort of review from 2018 prior to COVID. About 391 solid organ transplants were taking place. And at that stage, quite a few cornea transplants as well, mm-hmm. versus sort of 2021, that's the latest stats we have, a massive drop to 229 solid organ transplants. So you're looking at about a 41% decline in the number of transplants. And obviously, we would like to see the 2022 stats if there has been an increase and if numbers are getting, if there is an improvement in the number of transplants.
Obviously, those stats are going to be skewed by COVID because so many other medical functions were affected by that. And you're no exception.
reduction in that, but yes. It would be really, one hopes, fingers crossed, that those numbers will tick up again post the pandemic.
Yes.
Are those operations happening mostly in private, mostly in the public sector, or is it quite widely spread, Jester?
So in South Africa, about over 60% happens in the private sector.
Yeah.
But we should just keep this in mind again. Private sector hospitals are geared towards specific needs, where government hospitals must cater for everything. Mm-hmm. So you cannot compare this. So you can, you know, there's a dedicated hospital in Johannesburg, Wits Donald Gordon Hospital, that just does do transplants.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that hospital performs dramatically, you know, better than anybody else because they've got the infrastructure geared specifically towards that. So if you say 60% more in private, doesn't mean that public doesn't perform well. Just as a totally different reason.
Scenario, I get yes. you. Yeah. And in fact, our public sector is in many cases leading the way, doing really landmark, groundbreaking work in the transplant field. And I know sending doctors overseas to train in new techniques. So it's by no means our intention to suggest that they are lagging behind. The reality is, though, a couple of hundred operations being performed per year, a couple of thousand people needing those operations. Samantha, how big is the waiting list at any given time?
So the latest stats on that, 2,679 patients awaiting solid organs and about 2,000 patients awaiting cornea transplants. We're looking at about 4,700 patients awaiting transplants. In terms of number of patients dying, 189 patients died on the waiting list at the end of the sort of 2021 period with the stats that we had available. But there is a very important thing to mention, and that is that we don't have the number of patients that are being turned away from hospitals, that don't have access to dialysis facilities in hospitals. And that, I mean, at one point, I think when we looked at Tigerberg, something like 80% of patients were being turned away, that they cannot help those people.
Wow.
So if we look at the number of patients who've died who haven't had access to a transplant, it's far more. Probably thousands of patients have been turned away from facilities.
Gosh. Can you just elaborate a little bit about why somebody would be turned away? Is it because they're not sick enough to need one, or is it because they're too sick to qualify for a transplant?
So with the state sector, they only have a limited number of dialysis machines.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't be able to help. So they look at factors like, can the patient get to dialysis? Are they able to have transport? Do they live in outlying areas? Do they, for instance, are they over a certain age limit? The clinicians actually decide, are they the best candidate to receive dialysis? And only those candidates are then placed on the waiting list. Where in the private sector, we were actually looking at some stats yesterday, it was quite interesting. In 1994, state sector did more dialysis, they had more dialysis facilities yeah. available. And then in the private sector, over the 20-year period, there was a 3,000% increase in the number of dialysis facilities. So state got left behind, private started doing more dialysis.
Gosh.
So the facilities are now more readily available in the private sector.
I mean, it's such a tough call. You imagine the medical professionals having to make those decisions. And at the end of the day, we're talking about management of a scarce resource, and they've got to make decisions about who is likely to benefit the most.
Absolutely.
From that gift of a donor organ, which is still such a rarity, the whole reason we're having this conversation. You mentioned the impact of COVID. You've seen it in the stats. It saw a drop in the number of transplant operations happening. Did it also see a drop in the number of people signing up as donors?
During the COVID period.
Mm.
So with deceased donation, we actually saw normally they're about, I don't know if you know the stats, 1.6 donors per million population.
Yeah.
That's actual donors. So 2017, there were about 91 deceased donors. 2021, that dropped to 38 donors.
Gosh.
In entire South Africa, if you think about how many people die every year, there should be so many more donors. In terms of the sign-ups, you used to probably be able to answer that a lot better. We actually saw an increase in the people signing up during the COVID period.
Really?
Yeah. So what happened is in the beginning, when everybody had to go and sit at home, you know,
yeah.
the sign-ups increased dramatically. And that's mainly through social media.
Okay.
I think people spent a lot more time, you know, at home looking at their devices. So we did get a dramatic increase. But then a year later and now specifically, the sign-ups have actually dropped dramatically. So we can see there's a kind of depression or a sadness in the people, and it gets reflected in our numbers of registrations.
Isn't that interesting?
Even if we boost our efforts, it actually has got an impact.
Those numbers that you've shared with us are quite terrifying. A few hundred operations happening, thousands of people waiting. Let's talk a little bit about some of the reasons for that big disparity. What are some of the factors that are causing so few people to sign up as donors? Or is it more to do with the fact that too few of us actually die in circumstances that allow for organ donation, or is it a combination of the two?
You know, it's actually quite complex. There's things that we don't understand. For instance, in South Africa, according to Stats SA, about 12% of people die to violent-related deaths in South Africa every year, which is more or less 66,000, depending on what year you take, but maybe in the last 2 years or, you know. That's 66,000 opportunities, that's potential organ donors. Yet, that translates only to about 100, you know, in good years as to consent. So that is actually quite shocking, and it's things that we don't understand why it is so low. However, one of the things that we think could be the reason for that is that, you know, there's not enough procurement office or transplant coordinators on the ground in hospitals. You know, we mentioned earlier Spain, which is so successful. So in terms of people, resources that can work as peers one-on-one with medical professionals, doctors, and maybe ICU nurses, if there's more of those, it might translate into a dramatic increase into those numbers.
Yeah. Are there any cultural factors that are at play in South Africa? I know many religions support the concept of organ donation, support the concept of the gift of life that comes with it, but there might be others that feel differently, that have a sense of the importance of preserving bodies after death, etc. Is that something that is a factor at play here?
So yes, we actually have discussed culture quite a few times, and when we speak to, we've attended a traditional healers workshop, and actually people are very pro-organ donation. I think it's the lack of understanding and education. It's really the understanding of the subject. It's so complex and it's a difficult subject. So we find people are quite receptive to it. Culture is often used as a conversation stopper. So people can say, it's against my culture, and that's it. And it's very difficult to say, you know, no, it's not really against your culture. Can we talk about it, etc.? But I think ultimately education is the key. It's really people understanding the concept correctly, properly, to make that informed decision.
And we'll talk a little bit about some of the misconceptions that need to be perhaps tackled as part of that process in a moment. First, though, just some broad overview. We will get insight into the procedure of donation itself, and really looking forward to sharing with you a conversation I had with a transplant surgeon who spoke with such depth about the dignity shown to the patient and the respect shown to their family in that process. So that will be in a subsequent episode. For now, though, can you just give us a broad overview of who can at least be considered as a potential donor? What sort of criteria have got to be met in order for a donation to be possible?
So when we talk about signing up as an organ donor or registering, we encourage everyone to do it. We don't have limitations to your age, to do you have a chronic illness or whatever it is. We actually say to people, sign up, because all the necessary tests will be performed at the time of your death. And you don't know what will happen today. You could die in 20 years' time, and you could have had cancer in that time, but then be in remission, etc. So we leave it up to the medical professionals to determine that at the time of your death.
Right.
Yeah, just I want to add something here. Is also, you know, if you're a person of 100 years old, and, you know, maybe you've got all the chronic illnesses, and you still sign up as an organ donor, you know, you become an activist. And you become an example to your family.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a big part of all of this is to have the conversation with your family. So that is why we really encourage everyone to sign on.
Yeah. I also just want to say, from a personal note here, the one thing that really surprised me when I had a conversation with a tissue donation specialist, we were talking about skin donation, and I made the comment, I'm in remission from terrible eczema, you wouldn't want skin like mine. And the response was, no, we absolutely could. A lot of people make the mistake of thinking, ooh, I haven't had the best, healthiest lifestyle, or my skin has been problematic. But it might well be that it can be used.
Yes.
Or even if that organ can't be used, that another one still can be used. Samantha, do a lot of people sort of almost deselect themselves without understanding that actually there is potential for them to be a donor?
Absolutely. And something that happens often is people confuse signing up as an organ donor with other organizations. So we've got bone marrow, and there's limitations. You can only sign up if you have to be a certain weight, up to a certain age, etc. And we say to everyone, because that's a big confusion with other related organizations, we say sign up, because, you know, anyone can be an organ donor. So we encourage every single person. I think that's the important thing, to sign up today.
Okay, thank you for that reminder. Another thing people worry about is costs. They think, well, I don't want to have to pay for any operations after my loved one's death, so I won't sign up. There is no expense involved for the donor, is there?
No, there's no cost at all. So if you, to sign up as an organ donor costs nothing. So okay. Let's make that clear. To sign up is just a choice. If your organs are being used, so now you passed on and it's being used, there will be no cost to your family. You know, it's for the cost of the state or private hospital that's going to make use of those organs. So there would be absolutely no zero cost to your family when you passed away.
Also important to say, though, no compensation either. There's no payment made for any of these procedures, and it doesn't give you any kind of special preference to family members or anything like that either, does it,
Sam? Yes, no, yeah. It doesn't. So there's no compensation. It's illegal to buy and sell organs in South Africa, and it's important to note that it is a gift. It's a gift that can help save so many people's lives, and we do have people that actually message us often on social media, want to sell my kidney, etc. So, yeah, we have to handle that very carefully.
I bet. We are going to have a conversation later in the series with a medico-legal ethicist who will actually talk us through the laws that apply here and why it is the way it is. So very important to know that no cost to you if you are a donor, but also no compensation. Mm. One of the biggest misconceptions I think people have is that being an organ donor is going to change the kind of funeral or memorial service that you can have. Would you like to speak a little bit about that?
Yes. So the process obviously would take place when someone is on a ventilator in a hospital and has been diagnosed brain dead by two doctors. That's very important. And the team of specialists that come in, the team that do the transplant, are a completely separate team of you know, a lot of myths around it. Doctors will let me die or try to save my life, etc. So the team that would try, you know, do everything I can before the transplant team would come in, they would take into account things like if you need to be buried within the same day, if the family requests that, if there's special requests, they would take that into account. And the process happens quite quickly. The body's not disfigured in any way. If they remove bone, they replace it with a prosthesis. So the utmost dignity and respect to the family and to the body.
And again, our next episode with transplant surgeon Dr. Dave Thompson, he speaks very movingly about what that process entails. So more on that. So let's talk about the registry as we currently speak. I mean, that was a dreadful figure you shared with us. 1.6 per million of our population are actually donors. What does that mean for the numbers on your database, your registry? It's less than 10%, well less than 10% of South Africans who signed up. Not so.
Yeah, at the moment it's just over 1% of people who are eligible to register organ donors or who's old enough to make a decision to register as an organ donor. So it's around 410,000 people that's on our database. Although, you know, every day we do get over 100 people that sign up. It's just, yeah. So it does, you know, people constantly sign up but it's not fast enough. You know, we would really like to see this increase dramatically. And, you know, if you're already a registered organ donor and you're listening today, please, please go and speak to your family. Make sure everyone is registered. Find some 7 people to be organ donors to, you know.
It's so important what you've said there. And we're going to hear this over and over and over again throughout this series. It's not enough to only sign up. It's a wonderful statement of intention. It's a great guide to say and declare publicly, this is what I want. But Samantha, if that wish is not conveyed to the people who will actually make the decision, it's not worth the paper it's written on. Won't you just elaborate for us the importance of not just signing up, but telling your family you've done so?
Absolutely. So your family would ultimately give consent at the time of your death. So if you had signed up or not signed up as an organ donor, they have the final say. And it's important for people to speak to their family about it. Coordinators, when they approach the family, have always told us that if they know that the person's wish is to be an organ donor, it's so much easier to get consent. So they've had that discussion already.
Think about it. You're dealing with people at the worst day of their life, at a point of acute grief and trauma in many cases. If the conversation has already happened and they have a clear answer in their head that, yes, I know my loved one wanted this, it's so much easier to make that decision under immense pressure, and so much more difficult if you don't have a clear sense of it.
Yes.
As a matter of interest, have you ever had cases in the past where somebody who was a registered donor had their wishes overridden because their family refused?
So we obviously don't approach the family ourselves, but we have heard of instances from coordinators where consent isn't given, where, you know, the family feel that they do not want to, and obviously they have to respect that.
Yeah.
But as I said, if you speak to your family, they know this is your wish, it is a traumatic time, and knowing that they can fulfill your final wish, I think, is very important for people to know. Mm. So the one thing we have done recently, we haven't mentioned it in the conversation, is we've relaunched access with our database to transplant coordinators. So transplant coordinators can log in and check if someone is a registered organ donor with their ID number or name and surname, and then they have access to the next of kin contact information. And recently we've actually received quite a few, especially with tissue, quite a few referrals that have actually, they've used the database to and spoken to family members about tissue donation. So that's quite a nice add-on now with the organ donor database.
That's really encouraging. So having that information accessible to the people who really need to make those approaches, that's hugely, hugely helpful. What are the other challenges to growing that database? We've spoken about some of the misconceptions that might hold people back. We've spoken about the role of people's perceptions about what their culture will and won't accept. Is there anything else you'd like to mention that is an obstacle to growing the size of the donor database?
Okay, so I'll answer this one. So first of all, I'd like to say thank you to South African media. That's been so good to the Organ Donor Foundation and to organ transplantation as a whole. We get a lot of coverage and mileage and opportunities to talk about this. And although people talk, you know, we hear about this, we find that people do not go and register, and yet it's so easy. You know, you can go online. It literally takes 2 minutes of your time. We only ask your name and telephone number and ID number. And then we phone you, and then we get the details of your next of kin. So it's a really, really easy process. So our biggest challenge is really, you know, perhaps passivity. You know, people are passive and or they're uncertain. There might be uncertainty. A lot of people say, oh, we don't know how to register. But in today's time, you know, it's actually not an excuse. You know, anybody's got access to the internet. And you can go and you will find our website so easily, and you can sign on. And so you know what, it is a challenge, and I think we must have the conversation. You know, once you register, go and share this with your family. Get other people to sign on to. You know what? We're not, like you said, we're not even 10% of South Africans are registered organ donors. Australia's got almost 30% registered organ donors. America's got over 50% registered organ donors. You know, we could really, really do something about this. And I think we should stop making excuses and just do this.
Mm. The final question then is, how do you just do this? Samantha, won't you just run us through the process? As you just mentioned, it's as simple as can be. If somebody is listening to this going, I want to sign up today, where do they go? What do they do?
So it's super easy. It costs nothing. It literally probably takes 30 seconds of your time to sign up. You can visit our website. It's odf.org.za, or you can call us toll free during office hours, 0800 22 6611.
And then you get sent a sticker to put, well, on where you think it's most significant. Mine sits one on my ID card, one on my driver's license.
Yes, red organ donor sticker, and we also send an electronic pack with an organ donor card, and then we offer people the option to purchase a card. Actually, we get quite a few people that buy a plastic printed. It's a really nice little electronic card.
Samantha Nicholson, Joost van Meerland, thank you so much for joining us to launch this first episode of the podcast. I think it was really important to start with those background facts and stats to really paint the picture of just how serious the challenge it is to get more people on board. Thank you for your time today, and all the best to you and your colleagues at the Organ Donor Foundation. Thank you for listening to this episode of A Gift of Life. Please check out our website, capetalk.co.za, to follow the series in full and make sure you don't miss an episode. And I'd really like to encourage you to share these episodes with your own family and friends. Help start the conversation about organ donation in your circles of influence. If you'd like to register as a donor, please visit the Organ Donor Foundation on www.odf.org.za. It's a quick, easy, and free process, and it could save 7 lives.